what I was starting to say is that they, when they started hiring the women on the streetcars, the union suggested that they give the girls a working card. And the men said, no, if they're going to work on this job, they pay as much as we do, which is kind of a put down. So we did become union members because the men felt that we're going to pay less. But I was just wondering where you wanted me to start. I can go back to the Depression.
Yeah, what I'd like you to do is give a bit of your background around, like, personally, where you came from, when you came to British Columbia, or if you were born here, where you were born, and a bit about your parents' occupation, and then when you started to work.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah. I was born in Roland, Manitoba. I've just been back. My daughter's interested in genealogy. I went to as far as high school, which I was very fortunate. It was in the Depression, and I graduated in 1934. And I did get a job with Eaton's. I think every kid out of school, that's where we started to work in the Depression, which was just before Christmas, I guess, for about 6 years. You would. We came out here to Vancouver in 1935, and very bad times. There was just hardly any work. I got a job in Woodward's. Before that, I worked out back at the university. There was a tea room out there, and I was supposed to get $20 a month. I was living in, of course. And when he cashed in, he could only afford to give me $15 for the month. Well, we managed. Do you want to close the
Okay. We were talking a bit about your mother. Can you talk about your mother?
Oh. She was a school teacher, and she met my father in Roland in a small school, and she was the one that got us to move into Winnipeg, and eventually out to Vancouver. It was her doing. She did substitute when I was young in Winnipeg at schools, and then after, I don't know why she stopped the substituting, she worked at Woodward, at Hudson Bay in the kitchen. She seems to me she was always working. The jobs that my father had were not, he worked at Eaton's and got laid off during the Depression. Then he delivered coal, and the winters were so severe back there. And her idea was that she was so concerned with his health, but I think she was a very strong personality. She didn't work when we came out here, and she died in 1948. It was, she had a cancer operation. She had a mastectomy in 38, I guess, and it was 10 years later that they found that it was in the bone.
So you grew up in a family where the women worked?
Yes.
And it was accepted that women worked?
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yeah.
What kind of attitudes were there generally towards women having the right to work in the community you grew up in when you were young?
Well, there were so few jobs. If anybody was working, they were lucky, or they knew somebody. I worked at Eaton's, came out of high school, and I got a job before Christmas I haven't thought about this for a long time, in the mail order, wrapping parcels. And there were girls down there that had been going down for 7 years just getting work before Christmas. That's how tough jobs were. And I was called in after Christmas, which was a surprise to me. And I wasn't even, nobody talked to me because they felt that I knew somebody in the department. That's why I was asked back.
Right.
But I hadn't, I think it was my work. It wasn't that I was fast or anything, but I was thorough. Pardon me. No, anybody that could get a job, there were so few. And the laws, I guess, wouldn't allow you to work if you were married.
When did you marry?
I married in 38.
And were you working at the time?
I was working at Woodward's, and they let me out because I did get married.
how did that happen? Did they give you notice? Because
he just said that he was sorry I had told him, because he would have liked to have kept me on, but maybe if I had lied to it, hadn't told him that I can remember that. But at the time, my husband was working at fumigating, mm-hmm. And then he went up to worked in a mine, and was out of work before the war started, which started here in 39, August of 39.
So you were both out of work.
Not really. He did get a job. He was in the reserve army, and mm-hmm. he helped them in that way. And my mother and dad had a big house, which was a rooming house where everybody lived in rooms then, or the clothes closet that was made into a, you know, had a little stove or something that you always had to go to the bathroom for the water and stuff like that. But that was acceptable then, because I don't know, I guess everybody wasn't, but if there were so few people with jobs, it seemed to me that it was accepted that this is the way you live.
What were the working conditions like in those early jobs that you had, the hours and the pay? And the
well, everybody worked 48 hours in those, 48 hours a week in those days, and oh, I guess they were pretty bad, because I got a job one day in Eaton's in the cafeteria, and I came out of the door with a tray of something, and it broke, so she put me in the sink, you know, and I was a young girl at the time, and I wasn't asked back, you know, you just had to shape up. You, in those days, you got paid for what you did.
Right.
Nowadays, it seems to me that they're, I'm not putting them down, because we've worked for these conditions, but now it seems to me that they, sick pay and holidays, and which is what I work for, and I feel very strongly about, lots, you know, two or three holidays a year, I think it keeps people healthier mm-hmm. and more able to work and produce more, but we had to prove ourselves more then in those days. Pretty hard for some of the people to accept this.
Were the jobs that you had in these stores mostly women's jobs? Were there mostly women workers there?
Oh, yeah. A man, I guess, wouldn't have worked in a kitchen, really, would he? When you think of it.
Yeah.
There wasn't any women, any men around. I worked in a bindery, and the boss owned the store that my parents were working in, and I didn't allow him to put his hands on me, so I didn't get work anymore. I enjoyed that work, but that was the end. And I think there was much of that, you know, then the women had to...
Yeah. Was that in the 1930s that happened?
Yeah.
Before you married?
Yes, that was before I was married.
Mm-hmm. Okay. After... you had been laid off because of your marriage. What did you then do in terms of finding employment? Did you look for work? Or?
I did, but there was nothing. It didn't matter what I did. I felt that I needed something, especially when my husband left the fumigating business. Well, after he came down from the mine, as a matter of fact, it was so dangerous up at Britannia, the whole inside of that mine was mined out.
Mm-hmm.
And there were people being... He was coming down with 2 weeks... holiday, because he'd been next to the man that had been gone down the sluice thing. Have you been out to the Britannia mine? Oh, it's beautiful. You should go and see it. It's a museum. I had my daughter in October of 1939. He was already in the army by that time. And
did a lot of men join the army, both because of sort of patriotic reasons, but also because of the incredible lack of jobs?
Mostly because of the lack of jobs. I'm sure it was because there was men standing around the street corners here in Vancouver with a tin can wanting somebody to give them a nickel so that they could... And they were organized at that time, you know, and that was before they went down to Saskatchewan and the RCMP rode them down. They were on to Ottawa. Mostly because of lack of jobs and something to do, And I think most of the war did know what they were going into, but it was exciting. It was impossible for the ordinary Joe to go to Hawaii like we can today.
How did women react to the war beginning in terms of their husbands signing up? And
I guess there was a lot of talk, a lot of build up. There had to be, you know, because we felt very patriotic. I'm not anymore, but well, we had to save the world, I think. My husband was in the reserve, and he was, I don't know, just army crazy like kids are with soldiers, you know. And he just had to go over. He was in the Army Service Corps, and he changed to the Forestry Corps so he could get overseas.
Right. Had he been involved in trade union?
No, I didn't know anything about trade union before I went to Boeing's.
Right.
And he was already overseas by that time.
So when did you go to Boeing's?
I went back east with my husband before he went overseas and spent a year in Quebec City, so it must have been 1941 when I came back from there and went to work, because I didn't know whether he was coming back by that time. The war was pretty, well, you didn't know who was coming back.
Right.
Lots of them getting killed.
At Boeing's, how did you get hired on there? What was the procedure?
Well, you went down to, I don't think I went to Boeing's. I think it was a place where you registered, and they expected the women to do their patriotic duty. She was really prone to hire me. Maybe I was too well-dressed or whatever in the paint shop. That's all she had, just openings for the paint shop. And I said I didn't care. I would go there, but maybe there had been girls that had tried it and couldn't make it because of the smell, and it was heavy work. And I said I didn't care. And she told me how awful it was, and that made it more interesting to myself, I suppose. And yeah, we were doing men's work there, very heavy work.
Can you describe what the work was, what you were doing?
Well, in the beginning, we just went in and took, you know, stripped paint off the angles and all the metal parts, and loaded up trays for the painters, and then I became a spray painter. I started at 45 cents an hour at Boeing's, and I worked up to 90 cents as a Class A specialist spray painter eventually. It took about a year, I guess. I think I was only there about a year. But I had to ask for that Class A specialist. I was doing twice the work that these two fellas were, and they were getting the 90 cents, which was the Class A specialist wage. And I had to ask the boss, pardon me, I had to ask him. He said, do you think you qualify? And I said, if they do, I do. And in a couple of months, I did get my 90 cents an hour.
It was hourly rates, not piecework?
It wasn't piecework, no. You were hired from 7 o'clock till, 9 to 5. There were three shifts.
Right.
You got hourly rate.
Okay. What did you do as a spray painter? Did you have equipment that you carried around?
No. There was a waterfall, and these parts were brought in and put on big trays, and we took these heavy trays off, put them on a turntable in front of this waterfall, which was supposed to take the dust and stuff away. We also had masks. There were bigger parts. These, we were in the smaller parts, and we'd turn them over and paint them on the other side. And we had a pressure pot that was up here in the hole, you know, above us on the rack, and we had to learn to clean the guns and take care of that pressure pots, which we did.
Right. And did you work in teams or alone?
We worked alone. put one coat on and was sent over to get another coat on by another person. They eventually brought in the conveyor belt, mm-hmm. which was near the end of before Boeing's closed up, and that you had to be fast. Men weren't as able to do it. It was quicker, more of a rhythm thing, to get it. It was being painted by paint, you know, spray, but it wasn't doing the job, and you had to finish it as it went past you.
Right. Were women integrated all throughout the different jobs in the Boeing plant?
Oh, yes, yes. Well, there were so few men. The women were doing the jobs, riveting, whatever, you know, going into the planes, and some of them were pretty dangerous.
Right.
And
were there, like, training courses or on-the-job training? Or?
It was on the job. Any of the departments or any of the places where you worked, you'd get on-the-job training.
And what was the attitude towards women going into these war industries? Was it sort of that, well, this is temporary, it's for the war?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah, this was just doing your patriotic duty, yeah. As a matter of fact, I was working on the streetcars by the time the war was over. I had been working there for some time, and that was supposed to be the end, and people just came up and insulted you by just telling you, you know, you're taking the job away from the men. And for a couple of years, it was just deadly, really. You know, are you prepared to keep me in the manner in which I am accustomed to? You couldn't say that to everybody, but this is the way you felt, you know. What right? They didn't even ask me if my husband had come back from overseas or what. Didn't matter. You just, now, get off that damn job.
Right.
It was a lot of women, too, mostly women, that did. I think they hadn't taken the opportunity to do what you did, and I think it was more jealousy, envy.
During the war at Boeing's, was the attitude that was really strong within the women there, that they were doing this for the war effort, or did women also talk about how they needed the money and it was an experience for them in their own independence for the first
time? I don't think anybody considered anything about experience. Our experience before the war was that the prosperity was around the corner, but I don't know where, you know, there wasn't really any hope, I don't think, for anybody to... I had dedicated my life to becoming a nurse, and there was no place, there was no jobs. If my parents had had the $150 and that I would have had to pay and for my books and then my uniforms, I would have probably been doing housework, because there wasn't the jobs when you got through of these things, unless you knew somebody, and then probably not. I think it's much like it is right now.
Yeah.
It's getting like that, very definitely. Part-time jobs or... I had a friend that his parents were able to put him through for a teacher. He went to normal school, and he taught for a year, and he was offered a job in a service station at $5 a day or something, and he took it because he wasn't getting paid as a teacher. They gave him pigs and potatoes, and, you know, that was what you got paid when you went to these little places. Or... So that was your professional.
What was the supervision like at Boeing's? Was it very heavy, or?
I can't speak for the other departments, but I know that ours was, because we were in this room that had these big heavy doors, fire doors on them. I understand that there were a lot of them that would get into a plane and go to sleep, not do the job. I know the shipyards were well known for going there and going in and playing cards all day, and some of them even would punch the time clock and go and do another job. It paid. I mean, these were kids that should have continued on school, kids that left school to do this work, and parents who allowed it because they had had such a hard time when they weren't going to let their kids suffer. This is one of the things that I find was very wrong with a lot of these kids in, you know, that had the rebellion there, the dope, the drugs and things.
Okay. Were there any special facilities for women that the employers provided at Bowling's with this large sort of female workforce coming?
Toilets?
Yeah, restrooms, toilets, daycare, anything like that.
Oh, you're kidding. We had toilets, I guess, because there were mainly women there. The men were all overseas. Oh, no, there was nothing allowed. I mean, there was no comfort, so you went there to work, and you worked, did your job.
Can you talk a bit about the conditions? Like, you had mentioned earlier that it was very hot in the paint room. And
the paint shop was a big place, and it was a very important place. We had masks on, and I can remember a supervisor coming around, and of course they were very hot to wear, and we'd have them hanging down here, and we had to watch to see if somebody come in, strange came in. We didn't put our masks on, which was very foolish because it was a lot of dust. So that was supervised. That was our safety, but that's about all I can think of.
Was there any union activity going on at Bowling's when you were there?
Well, all I can remember is that they were trying to unionize. There were people coming around talking to us and not knowing or not ever having been involved or not even knowing what my husband's opinions were on it because he was never in a union job. I just didn't know, you know. I was a little bit concerned about even talking to these people or even wanting to know until a situation happened that we were locked out, the government, which was an unknown thing for them to close down a plant. It must have been quite a threat to them to close it down for a week. And when we came back and we had this, coffee time? It wasn't coffee time. I think it was 5 minutes. And it was once a day. And I can't say whether it was doubled, but I know that production was up so much that they kept it up. We were then allowed to have this little break in the morning.
Did the break make a difference in your day?
Oh, yes. It was just like you just got renewed and way back you went, because you would get 4 hours steady working. It was just, you know, and you could go to the toilet, which some of them made 2 or 3 trips, I guess. Maybe that's why they had their cigarette. I didn't. It made a difference to everybody. We were able to talk to somebody in the shop. You just didn't come in and go to work.
Were there other kinds of issues that people tried to build the union around? Union?
There must have been in the other shops. I know that with us, this was it. And, of course, I wasn't there too much longer after that, and I don't remember during the war, they didn't raise wages if you stepped up in the production or got yourself a better position, yes, but 45 cents an hour, that was the wage that you, because it was the patriotic thing to do, I guess.
Right. What did you do about childcare while you were working?
My mother took care of my daughter. I lived in their house, which was a rooming house, and she took care of my daughter when I was at work.
Did you have to work different shifts?
Yes, 3 shifts.
So how did that affect both, you know, your working conditions and also you being able to maintain a relationship with your child while you were working?
I didn't seem to have any problem with the relationship with my child because my mother allowed. I took over when I came home, and there was no question about who was responsible. And I don't remember having too much problem with the relationship.
Were the swing shifts really exhausting, though, or did you get used to it? Or?
The graveyard shift, of course, was something. By 2 o'clock, it would quieten down so that there was hardly anything. I think we all practically went to sleep, and then we waken up about 2 hours later. We didn't go to sleep, but afternoon shift I didn't like, because your whole day was wasted. But you took them and you did the job then. Day shift I think was a little harder. I think you had a half hour in order to make the shifts the right length, so everybody worked 8 hours. We only had half an hour for lunch, and the cafeteria was about a half a mile over here. So you ate your sandwich. You brought one because you didn't have time to go and buy one and sit down. There was no way. So I forget what the question was.
Oh, I was just asking about the effects of shifts on your work, and also I wondered about other women. Like, did the other women talk about trying to get on evening shift or night shift so that they could see their kids during the day?
You can't. Like, you couldn't do that. You worked 1 week days, 1 week afternoons, and a week graveyard, and you had to make your arrangements for your children. If your parents lived in town, or if you had someone that could take care, you were lucky.
Right. Did the women talk a lot about kids and the problems that they were having with them? Is that?
I don't remember people having too many problems with their children at that time. I don't know what this. I haven't even given it too much thought. I think after I talk to you, I'll probably come up with some things.
Right. Okay. Were there any other issues that the women talked about at Boeing that concerned them? For example, dress codes, maybe in the plant or anything like
we
that.
We had overalls that covered us. They were from our neck right down, and we had to wear a kerchief over our heads. We had to take our rings off because the compensation wouldn't pay anything if you got a ring caught in any of the machinery. And we ended up coming to work always on Monday with our rings on, because we put them on over the weekend. And I lost mine because I stuck it in my wallet and lost my wallet. So our clothes, I always like to dress, and I think anybody that wears a uniform probably dresses or likes it dressed a little better, because it's a complete change. In those days, we had a style. Every year it was a different style, and everybody wore the same thing. You know, it's different today, and I think it's great you wear what you please.
Why did you decide to leave Boeing's and try and get another kind of job?
Well, I don't know whether it was slowing down too much. My main reason was that they'd put a fellow in as head of the department that couldn't read English, and he came to me and asked me, why wasn't I, then I think I must have felt, then why wasn't I allowed to be the shift boss if I was having to do the work? There must have been wrong with him, something health-wise, or he would have been in the Army, of course. I just felt I couldn't work under him, but you had to give a notice or have some sickness or some debility to get out during the war. You couldn't just quit your job. And I had been considering this streetcars. It fascinated me, and there were girls working on that job, and I just really wanted to try it. So I did.